Welcome to Diverse Wellbeing, a podcast where parents of children with needs find support, connection, and real conversations on embracing self-care. This is your host, Anne Loren, a special needs assistant and psychotherapist in Tipperary, and grandmother to three autistic children. In today's episode, I'm talking with Rachel, a teacher with over 10 years' experience in an early intervention classroom. Each episode of this podcast falls into one of a few categories designed to support you in different ways. You'll find well-being episodes that focus on everyday strategies for calm and balance. Mind Matters episodes that explore emotional patterns and mental health. Practice episodes offering tools and strategies. And Parent Story episodes where fellow parents share their lived experiences. Today I'm introducing a new category, Professional Insight. These episodes will feature voices from experts, therapists, educators, and well-being professionals, offering thoughtful guidance to help you feel informed, supported, and empowered on your journey. I hope you enjoy listening to my conversation with Rachel. Hi, Rachel.
Hi.
Thanks for talking with me today. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your experience working in an early intervention class?
Hi, Anne. It's lovely to be here today. My experience, I guess I came into it very enthusiastically. I came out of a learning support setting. I 3 years nearly completed there. So I can't really explain the why or the drive, just that I knew it was something I really had to try or start or do.
And now that you've been how long in early intervention?
I'm going to say I'm coming up to a decade.
Wow.
Yeah.
So how is your experience now?
I have a lot of training done. I've spent a lot of time reading and kind of upskilling myself and wanting to know, you know, right approaches, current approaches. You know, you want to do your best for the children that you have in your setting. You always want to make sure you're on the right side of the right thing. You're not going to do any harm.
Yes.
That's the main thing. I never want to do or cause distress or harm or upset in this environment. So I guess, yeah. And having three of my own children now, I have more experience of that age group and managing toddlers and toddler needs and, you know, experience I wouldn't have had. This is just life experience. This isn't job experience. This is just experience that I suppose added to my own skill set in here and, you know, taught me different ins, different strategies, just different gentle is the approach you want in here. You want to be really gentle. They're really young. They're really vulnerable. And a lot of our children are pre-verbal and can't immediately in the moment express what they want or need, or you know, you just need that time and that processing space and that kind of kindness, I guess, to allow those children, you know, that are coming here to thrive and do their best in this environment. You know, and nobody thrives or does their best if they feel stressed or pushed into a situation or uncomfortable, or you know, this one's coming over for me here now and she's going to make me do this and I don't want to do that, I'm happy over here, you know. So it's a very gentle, very organic, I think is the word, process to start. We just start with, my goal when a child starts here is they just come in the door happy. They want to be here. There's no tears because they're thinking, oh my gosh, you know, this awful day ahead of me in here and now, and she's going to follow me around, getting me to do this, that, and the other thing. And, you know, I just want to be over here with the tractor or whatever. So wherever they start, wherever they are ready in their own learning and their own development, that's where we begin. and we afford time, and it might be a month, it might be 8 weeks, it might be 3 months, whatever the child needs, and we just very gently intrude and try and find areas of mutual connection, ins, you know, mutual interest where we can start and then gently build from there.
So it sounds like you really meet the child where they're at.
Yeah.
As they present.
Yeah, that's my goal now. And, you know, being really honest, when I started, I was probably more driven by what the courses would say, and you need to have this on your timetable and that on your timetable, and the child needs to have this experience and that experience. And I guess I very quickly realized you're causing distress or upset to a child if they're quite happy over here doing this, and they're really engaged and they're really focused and they're giving you an in and they're allowing you to be beside them in those moments. Why on earth are you taking them out of that lovely, joyful moment and pulling them up to say, you know, let's go over here, out of this lovely moment, because the timetable says ball pool, you know?
Yes.
It's not an effective approach in here, in this setting. I guess I very quickly learned it's not conducive to the needs.
Yes. Can I ask you, Rachel, how does an early intervention class like this differ from a mainstream preschool? Like, in terms of like the structure, the support, the approach,
yeah,
how does it differ?
Well, I guess we, our staffing, I suppose we'll start there. We have one teacher and two SNAs to six children. So our ratio is 2-1. So immediately we've got very, very low numbers and a very, very high level of care. I'm not 100% sure on the mainstream ratios, but I think, is it 1-13? Possibly there or thereabouts.
Yeah.
I stand to be corrected because I haven't worked in a mainstream preschool setting, but it's a much higher ratio. It's a busier, noisier, livelier environment. It's probably one room. All of these children in one room, bustling about, doing their thing. Whereas we have rooms. You know, we have two additional, a sensory room, a ball pit room, and the main classroom, which then has areas. So there's play areas, free play areas, soft areas, you know, there's different areas to meet different parts and needs. We have a swing, you know, we've all of these fabulous additional resources that we can pull out and introduce and set up at any point of the day. And it's a much freer, I guess, movement. The only set thing or time in our day is eating time. So we have two set snack times every morning, and outside of that, it's child-led. I mean, we will set up themes, we will have ideas, we will have things we want to teach or things we might want to try. They're all there, they're all ready every morning, but, you know, not every child might hold the same level of interest in every activity that day. They might rather do something else, so we'll try and adapt on the go and meet them where they're at. So I guess we have more flexibility because we have a higher ratio of staff to children, and we can do that lovely flexible pivot.
Yes.
We're not constrained to very, very strict,
yes,
linear outcomes. You know, we can zig and zag a bit throughout the day. And we've recently engaged with a new OT, and she's amazing. And the issue of a child standing up and observing down came up, you know, and it was something we see a lot in this setting of. It's a very common theme, I guess, or a very common experience for children. And she explained that it is a way of that child protecting themselves. So they're up here observing down, that they're not stuck in whatever chaos or activity or busyness. It's like, I'm up here, I am participating, but I'm participating in the only way I can, and that is from a little bit of a distance, a little bit of height. The height gives me a little bit of power.
Wow.
So I'm controlling how I participate. And I just thought it was so eye-opening because, you know, you might just look at the child and say, why are they climbing again?
Yes.
You know, you might not think, hang on a minute, they're actually protecting their boundaries, their space, you know, themselves from an experience they're just maybe not able to cope with in that
look
moment.
Look at the cleverness or the I don't know, self-protection.
They're amazing.
Look at the amazing ability that they have,
yeah,
without being able to maybe verbalize that or...
Yeah. They teach you so much.
They teach you so much.
Yeah, every day. Yeah.
How do you handle then, say, transitions, let's say, between
the ball pool or between the swing or sensory play or messy play. How do you manage those transitions?
We have a few strategies. So like we do the typical, your object, you know, your prompt object. So you might have a nappy for if a child is still in nappies, or a pull-up, if they're in a pull-up, their own one. And, you know, one of the staff members might pick it up and say, just literally, toilet time, you know, and then hold up the physical object. So that might help the child make the link of the transition that's to come. There's also the visuals for the visual timetable, so they can be useful for some children, not for every child. Some children find them too abstract, but in our stage especially, they can be a bit abstract. But some children do and do rely on them, and they would prefer that visual. Another strategy that I have learned that really works down here is to sing as you move. Some children, not all, some children hate singing, but some children love it. And when they hear a song, you know, we've all sorts of random different songs for different moments down here that are in no way published or fabulous. They're just made up kind of jingles that we've kind of formed along the way. And they will signal children, you know, just hearing once that song starts, so that, you know, the go, the movement, they'll immediately stand up and come to the toilet door. I'm giving the example of a toilet. There are lots of other transitions. Also processing time. Some children need 2 to 4, maybe, you know, this is coming with the physical object or the visual. And then again, another couple of seconds, it's coming now, it's coming. You know, we're just to create that this is going to happen, but it's going to happen in a little bit, not just to me, just to give the child a moment to process, there's a change coming here. Because everything we do all day long is to avoid upset. That is our goal. We don't always succeed, but we try to be as gentle and as clear in any movement as we can. And to be fair, after a few weeks in here, our routine is so consistent. The children nearly know, you know, at snack time, I will have currently 3 children sitting at the table waiting before anyone has picked up a visual or anyone has picked up a lunchbox. Their body clocks just know it's time for snack now. And there they are at the table waiting, you know, patiently for their lunchbox to appear. I guess there's safety in consistency, especially in here, you know, and that's kind of what we aim for.
It's lovely, Rachel, isn't it?
Look, it is when it is, you know, when it's all working and you know, you feel like you're getting it right. It is wonderful.
Just a question about, you know, parents worry about their child's communication, whether they're verbal or pre-verbal, and how do you support language and communication? Now, you've mentioned the prompt, like the pull-up or the visual. Would those be ways you'd support
language? Yeah, well, they'd certainly be starting points. So that, you know, that would be where we'd start, because obviously some of our children we have for 2 years. So we get to know, even if they make a sound or the tone of the sound, we know nearly what they want or need, or if they're happy or not happy. You know, it doesn't need to be a big outburst. You nearly know just by the child. You get to really intimately and really, it's lovely in that sense. You really, really get to know the children you're working with. I guess communication, they're so effective, especially the pre-verbal children at, you know, we have some children that can't point yet, but they'll walk you to what they want, and you just know, because you know the child, you know where they're walking you to and why they're walking you there. Or they might stand in a certain place and kind of just wait until you approach and get the item or the thing, or bring them to the place. Or, you know, if it's down, say, to the, they want access to the ball pool, they might just stand at the door. Or let me think, other examples. It's hard to nearly put words around how effective, you know, you would think on the surface, or having never done the job, that, you know, surely if a child isn't verbal yet, how would they tell you? And if they can't point and they can't, you know, use all of these communication tools, how do they? They are so effective. They're the most, and so sensitive to emotion, good, or, you know, if you have a good vibe in the room, or maybe someone's a little out of sync today, our children will pick up on an environment before anyone knows if there's a good issue or not, and, you know, before something is made clear. They're so hypersensitive to their setting and their environment. They're incredible. But I guess we do link in with HSE therapists as well. We will take any advice, any support they give. We will work through any resources or guidance. We'll take it all, you know, we'll do anything to support and help a child. But really, I guess, Anne, with the communication, our children are so effective on their own sometimes with just... It's hard for me to nearly verbalize how effective, how intuitive, how skilled.
But isn't that wonderful to go from, like, for parents listening, to go from looking at your little child who mightn't be able to say the word and mightn't be able to point. Mm. But if you actually trust and, you know, watch and observe them and their body language and their sounds, they will let you know.
Oh God, yeah.
And by trusting in that and following through with that, and maybe then saying, oh, I see you want to do that or get that, or there's
that's it, we'll label it.
There's the toy, good job. Or whatever kind of thing, that then you've named it and they know the name, and it's like, that's going to build language in time. But you're with them in that moment of understanding, I know what you want. Mm. I know what you're asking from me, using your way to ask me.
Yes. Yeah. And they will use every tool they have. You know, you just have to. And that's it. Have the time to watch. And we have it because we have so many staff to so few children. You know, we have, if our children were absorbed into a class of 24, you'd miss those signals. They are so subtle, just to be, you know, to be really frank about it. They might be a sideways glance. They might be, I'm going to linger in this area for a moment and then no one's going to help me, so I'm just going to move on. It could be that fleeting.
Yes.
But you have to catch it. And then once you build up that rapport, you know, they will start coming to you because they'll start realizing, hang on, you know, this one can give me what I need now. Now she knows what I want, and, you know, she can reach it. She can get it for me. Or, you know, open that cupboard up there. And it's just, it's so amazing. And every child, when they start, leave in a completely different level, or at a completely different level of communicative ability than when they started. It's just so amazing in 2 years how you see that progression unfold.
Early
in front
intervention
of you.
Works.
Absolutely.
It works.
It really works. Yeah, it really does.
Our sensory, you know, sensory regulation issues are common in autistic children. So, like, where do you start?
Oh my goodness. This one has been, I guess, my career's work trying to get this right. Because you get this wrong, you can ruin a morning, you know, for a child. And there's such a fine line between meeting a need, regulating a child, dysregulating, you know, getting into the hyper stage. It's a really hard one to start with when you've no experience. And I guess I had no experience when I started, but I've been really fortunate and I've met some incredible OTs along my journey, and I've had some really amazing professional guidance and advice. And I guess every child is different. So what works for child A might drive child B absolutely crazy. Like, you know, it would not regulate or meet any sensory need. So I guess, again, like the communication, you have to get to know the child. You have to get to know what works. Reports will say so much, but needs are changing and needs evolve. So what maybe worked 6 months ago might no longer be a sustainable intervention for that child because they may have moved on in their needs or developed in their needs. So we are lucky, we have incredible resources. You know, we have a bubble tube room where a child can go in, it's dark, there's a lovely noise off the bubble tube, and then there's the visual input, and we tend to keep that room as a kind of a safe space. So a child can go in there and just be. There's no requests, demands, anything. It's just safe, quiet, calm. There's blankets, there's cushions, it's just downtime. Some children really need that out. Some children would never enter that room. It just doesn't, doesn't meet any need, or maybe hit any sensory buttons, you know, it just doesn't appeal. But then, you know, then there's the ball pool room where you can have the rough and fun with the child, you know, so you can pick them up, roll them, flatten them with the peanut balls, throw them around a bit in there. This sounds terrible, but some children really need that heavy play.
The deep play and
the kind of high energy play. And then that room, I guess, meets that busier need. We also have a couple of different types of swings for motion. So we have, it's like a paddleboard swing where a few children can sit on it and just gently rock. Or then there's the deep pressure cocoon swing, which is actually in high use this year in my room for the first time ever. And you can work a child's legs really, really well in it, you know, for the higher energy children that really need that kind of high energy input. You can just gently hold their ankles and they'll springboard literally off you in their deep pressure swing. And, you know, it's an amazing piece of kit if that's the input a child needs in your care, you know, so we've that.
It's incredible that, you know, the needs are so diverse.
So diverse.
And, like, you couldn't have more than six children.
No.
Because you need, and you need every one of the staff. Because you're meeting a high need and maybe a hyper need and then a hypo need.
Yeah.
And you're from early in the day to going home time, that child can go from one to the other, can't they?
Exactly, yeah.
So it's a lot, it's so many needs. But what I really like what you said there about their needs are evolving. Like they're developing and growing. Yes, they may have additional needs, but they are developing, maturing and growing throughout. Yeah. And that's got to be remembered too.
Absolutely. You know? Yeah. And sometimes, you know, as they develop and evolve, they find strategies that they can just do for themselves. You know, they might like to lie down and rock, or lie into a beanbag and cross their legs and just, you know, be in the moment, or, you know, maybe find one of the sensory toys like a ball and rub it across their face. Then it's being allowed, I think, it's having the freedom to be independent in the environment enough to know how to meet your own needs and then to meet them yourself. I think that's a really important skill for our children. You know, we will start, we will help at the beginning to facilitate, but that is a big thing I've noticed over the years, certainly with our year two students. All of a sudden you start to see them just going for the thing they need. All of a sudden they know, they can identify that feeling in themselves and go and get the resource or the item or the area or whatever, the tools, whatever it is that they need to just self-regulate. And that is so incredible when you see that development happening, because that's a life skill, you know.
Yes, I think I have learned more from my grandchildren in terms of self-regulation, that I've actually watched what they do, and I've used some of it myself and realized I need this as well. I need to find what works for me to help me calm, to help what makes me feel calm as an adult. What do I use? Where do I go to sit for my calm moments? And by observing them or being with them while they do their thing, I've realized how much I've learned from them, and it's wonderful.
Oh, it is wonderful. Really is wonderful. And you're so right, Anne. We don't give ourselves enough time to meet our own regulatory needs sometimes. You know, life is busy. You know, you jump from one activity to another, and, you know, they would really teach you. You know, you need to take this time, the children in this setting, take the time, meet your needs, and then you're ready to get up and move on to the next thing.
Yes.
And it's only through seeing it over the years, you know, that's not something I would have said to you 10 years ago. It's not something I would have known.
So Rachel, just before we, you know, bring our lovely discussion to an end about, you know, our little ones in early intervention classrooms. What then can parents do at home to complement, you know, what happens in the strategies used here? And can a parent help prepare their child to come to preschool?
I guess if we start with the preparation, so when you are allocated a place in our setting, you come in with your child, maybe your partner, depending on your situation, and you have a meeting with the teachers in the setting. You get time to allow your child to explore the setting. The day is clearly laid out to parents, and that means, you know, the activities, how we run things. And then a few weeks later, once, because we've two classrooms in our particular setting, once the staff are designated to the children, a specific transition book will be posted out to parents. So depending on the room, the photographs will be from either or rooms, depending on the teacher, the SNAs. It will be tailored to your child's setting. So not just the generic environment, but where your child is actually coming, who will be working with your child, the staff in the school, the, you know, it's all there, and it's kind of nicely ordered. And we encourage parents, once that book is sent out, to go through the little visuals and just like a storybook, treat it like a storybook. And I guess it just builds a bit of memory and a bit of security around all the newness that's to come. So that's kind of our approach to the transition, because it's hard to do much more when you're not in the setting yet, you know. It's kind of that preparation phase. We have a very, I guess our ethos would be to be very communicative and very open with parents. So we always want our parents to know about their child's day, not in a judgy or judgmental, any sort of way, like, just because if we're open, it encourages parents to be open. And the more open we are with each other, it creates this lovely communication circle. And, you know, sometimes you stumble upon a strategy that works by accident. Sometimes it's complete potluck. You take something down off a shelf on a random day because it might be raining and maybe you can't go outside. And next thing you discover a child's complete love for something you never knew they showed any interest in before. And it's amazing when you get those aha moments, and it happens at home too with parents, where maybe they've bought a new toy or they've been to a house and, you know, there was another resource that they hadn't used before in the house, whatever it is. And if we share those information bits with each other, you find very quickly that the support is consistent, because we're all using the same types of strategies and interventions. And it just makes it so much more effective, because everyone's singing off the same hymn sheet rather than just trying random things, you know, that might or might not work. So that, I find that that really helps. And likewise, you know, if a child had a bad night and, you know, a parent messages in that morning, just, you know, they're really dysregulated, they've had a really bad night's sleep. I know before the child comes into my room that I need to have maybe some regulatory activities out, have a very quiet, calm morning, very low demand, and it just bolsters and kind of strengthens the support around the child, so that you're doing the right thing for the child in the moment and meeting their needs where they are. Yes. I guess.
And you know, we could talk forever, Rachel, but, and this would be another time, this would be another subject for something that we could talk about. But I think from what you've just said about the strategies and what parents can do at home then to kind of complement those, I really feel that those methods, let's call them, whether it's, you know, little poppy toys, or whether it's cuddly toys or a blanket or their juicy cup or their snacks, that if parents realise that that really settles my child, then they can bring their child maybe to a party, a birthday party, or to visit somebody, or to the supermarket in time.
Yes.
When they realise, if I have these, you know, my bag of tricks for my child's needs at the moment, it's much more likely to succeed and be a regular occasion than a distressed occasion. And so I love the approach of the gentleness, and the allowing the child to be as they are, as they present. But I just feel that's another day, that's another podcast that we could talk about.
A bag of tricks is important.
A bag of tricks,
it's crucial.
Yes, for every child.
For every child,
But for these, for little ones who need early intervention, that bag of tricks can be the difference between, you know, feeling stuck at home and being out and about in the world with your family.
For both adult and child. The adult has the reassurance of knowing I have 5 strategies in my bag here that, you know, if things go awry on us, that I can reach for. And the child, if they get overwhelmed and distressed, has maybe familiar or fun or distracting resources ready.
Yes.
You're not rooting or rummaging or trying to buy or find, or, you know, there's no fluster. It's just there.
It's there.
It's there to hand. Yeah.
Well, Rachel, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking with you today. And thank you so much for giving us so much insight to the experiences of little people in an early intervention class.
Well, it's been a pleasure. Thank you, Anne.
Thanks again to Rachel for sharing her insights with us. You can join our mailing list by visiting our website at diversewellbeing.ie to receive updates on new episodes. This is Diverse Wellbeing, empowering parents and embracing wellness.